At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Joining us right now, attorney John Ray. He is representing some of the victims' families of the Gilgo Beach murders. He's also been making headlines the last couple of days discussing not only Rex Heuermann, but his wife, Asa Elrup, who police have initially cleared and said she is not a suspect in this case. He disagrees and has been making that known on Cuomo last week amongst some other outlets. He now joins us for an in-depth conversation where we'll do more than just sound bites. We'll let you sit here and talk forever long you want and really explain where you're coming from with some of these thoughts and observations. John, welcome to the program. I also just want to start up by noting that we here at True Crime Today and Hidden Killers do not have proof of what you are suggesting, but I certainly want to hear you out and understand where you are coming from, because asking questions is not a crime. That is a good thing in a case like this. Let's start out. Give us some background on who you represent in this case, and we'll go from there.
Well, I've been representing the victims' families for a long time now, and the Shannon Gilbert family since 2011, and then members of the Jessica Taylor family for several months. And I've represented other sex workers involved in this case and in related cases. So
okay.
I've been pretty in the thick of it for a long time.
So yeah, you've seen the inside and out of this far before the name Rex Heuermann ever really came into play into this, from what I'm understanding. We've been watching this very closely. You have been rather outspoken on some of your comments about Rex's wife, saying that she should be considered a suspect and not just a bystander of someone who's been victimized by her husband. Can you expand upon that a little bit? Why do you feel that way? And I hope I'm quoting you as accurately as I can based on what I've read.
Okay. What you said sounds accurate.
Okay.
Sorry. You know, there's a number of reasons to believe that she should be considered a suspect. And that starts with the fact that she seems to be playing a con game in trying to raise money for herself and allegedly for her adult children by retaining lawyers and going on national TV and media to recruit money, or to have them recruit money from the public. And that's their first scam. That scam's ongoing. But if you know, without me having my famous witness in tow here, still anybody with a common sense, a good deal, or maybe even a little experience in life would understand that it makes no sense that he's been with her for 27 years and he has managed to have only 3 escorts and kills all 3 of them, and that all happens to be while she's on vacation. And, that's the sum and substance, perhaps 4. And then let's move on and say she's a victim. You know, that seems to be what's been done here. And, of course, that's completely absurd. In fact, he has had prostitution, an inclination to support that crime over the years, apparently in many occasions, at his home in Massapequa Park. And in that little shack of a home, that tiny place, this would occur downstairs, and on the main floor she would be, and her children were there as well, living there as adults, even as young adults, when all this was happening. So, or as teenagers in their late years anyway. So of course, I mean, it stands to reason that if he's doing things like that downstairs, and I'm not saying that he's doing the killings right there and then downstairs, but he's having these sex partners constantly and he's paying for them, you don't think that the family could hear it? You know, we all live in, pretty much, most of us anyway, in fairly, you know, standard, you know, modest houses, and you can tell what's going on downstairs when you're upstairs. And here they didn't have a soundproof room. Their own lawyer says that. So you could hear, you could, in that little place, you'd say you wouldn't know that. And in this age of computers and cell phones, internet, you wouldn't know where your husband was for 27 years. It's unlikely, you know, and escorts wear lots of perfume usually. You don't think that the standard everyday person, wife, spouse, would notice that this guy had issues going on like that? I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. And sure enough, there's on top of the absurdity of the claim that that he's got somehow a secret life, there isn't a scintilla of evidence produced by anybody that she's abused. Just the conclusions said by some media people and her lawyers that she lived a wife, you know, a life of terrible oppression and abuse. Where's the evidence of that? And instead, we have the evidence of a real sociopathic family. Sociopathic. Why? Because with all of this going on and their complaints about what's done to them, they've never once complained. They've never once said anything on anywhere that we know of that actually indicates their sorrow for or sympathy with or in any way connection with the true victims and their families as to what happened. They never mention it. Sure. Now, under these circumstances, that's pretty sociopathic. And how does Mrs. Ellerup greet the press when they first show up at her home while she manages to sit on the front porch while they show up, which makes no sense either, for somebody that's supposedly oppressed? She gives them the European middle finger. That's how she starts off. Very angry, uptight, nasty woman. And so, if you know, when you take that, and then there's all seen sitting on the front porch, giggling, laughing, carrying on, and she puts up her comic books to show that she goes to these Comic-Con places and goes on like that. Does that strike you as a little odd? Kind of reaction of someone who just found out for the first time that their husband was a mass murderer or a serial killer and is connected to their home? I mean, it doesn't sit well. It sits well with a sociopathic personality, and that kind of a personality is much more inclined to be in the situation they were in fact, where she is basically offering her home for the uses of escorts by her husband, and she's therefore an accomplice to those crimes. And that jives with the sociopath. What should I say? So that jives with the sociopathic behavior that you can see. In addition, why are they hiring lawyers? Everybody said so far that they're not suspects. So why do they need lawyers? I mean, I understand she has a divorce lawyer, but they have lawyers now to go out and try to raise money for them, to go calling a national press conference to do that. And why do the children, who are adults, need lawyers? What's the value of the lawyer to step in and do that? There's no reason for it, no rational reason for it, unless they're trying to raise money for a legal defense fund, in fact, or, you know, for the future, or they have a problem that they don't want to admit. So you know, here's these superfluous lawyers coming in and going on national television. Where were they, by the way, at the press conference? You'll notice they weren't there to answer questions. And, you know, it's said that they're poverty-stricken and they don't even have water and they're asking people to give them water. They had, when they held that press conference, they already had $44,600 and change in their GoFundMe account. So they had plenty of money at that point. So then for the lawyers to go on the TV and ask for more money, what's going on here?
So
it seems obtuse, say the least.
And you know, I can understand there. Everything in this case seems very gray. There doesn't seem to be any black or white in any of this. What I can certainly understand, and I'm trying to understand where you're coming from, you are certainly questioning the legitimacy that she did not know that Huerman was likely frequenting sex workers in the basement. Not necessarily saying that she was aware that he was killing sex workers, allegedly, but that he had this other life going on. Maybe that they had some sort of arrangement. Maybe she put her head in the sand, but knew it was going on. But to say that she was completely clueless is probably an overstatement, according to you. From what I understood from what you had said, I believe, with Chris the other day, or with some interview that you had given, was talking about another witness that has knowledge that you believe can set that straight, that she would have been knowledgeable of these sort of these sex acts taking place. Is that right?
That's so far you're correct. And this, I've been misquoted, misstated several times by the media, but that happens. But you seem to be accurate. But really, just let me finish on that.
Go for it.
These people who are claiming that, you know, they're poverty stricken and they need money. Have a look. They all three had employment, not counting Mr. Huerman, who's making over $400,000 a year from all reports. And they managed to generate a delinquent tax bill where there's a judgment and a lien against them for over $85,000, $80,000+ that's out there currently. So for every penny the public gets conned into giving them to their legal defense fund, that's going to the tax lien to pay off Mr. Huerman's tax bill. They're paying off Mr. Huerman's tax bill when they contribute money to that fund, because that's the IRS has a tax levy out
sure.
there for them. So it's ridiculous. people are giving money to give to the alleged murderer by doing it that way. And are they poor? Do you generate a tax delinquent bill like that if you're poor? I doubt it. And she flies to Iceland, ComCon conventions all over the country. She flies to Miami with her husband, to Las Vegas. They own four or five properties throughout four or five states. And, you know, where they travel to, do poverty stricken people do that? And the notion that they have, well, you know, they're poor things, they're on food stamps, that's not true. It's apparently not true. The son, they claim to have a developmental disability of some kind. You get food stamps for that. And so, I mean, there's every reason to believe that they are conning the public big time. That's really a sociopathic. But you'll notice something else. They haven't gone into the DA to speak to him and say, look, we're innocent. Check it out. So
yeah.
That hasn't even occurred yet.
That is a question I have, and I've been wondering about it. I've been bringing that up because from all accounts, including theirs, they have not gone in and spoken, nor have they been called in to go and speak. How odd does that strike you in a case like this where the husband is accused of being a serial killer, and yet there hasn't been an in-depth conversation with the spouse yet? At the very minimum, just to get information of what life was like. And it seems very bizarre to me that nothing has been said to them yet, or they haven't been called in, unless, of course, they're sitting there letting them live their life and seeing if just their behaviors play anything out.
Yeah, it's strikingly miss in that, as well, two of the hairs found on two of the victims belong to the wife. And, you know, we have all these experts bubbling about the country on the media saying, well, you know, hair can, you know, if you're in close association with your wife, her hair comes off, could be on your shirt, could
sure.
be anywhere, could be on the floor. I mean, all that's true, except if you lose 100 hairs a day, which is supposedly the average person loses in a house like that, there's bound to be more of the hairs than the two that are found. If it's just inadvertent, only two of her hairs are found on the bodies of the victims, on part, you know, some part of their clothing or the wrapping, and only one of his. So somebody who's doing that wrapping is making sure at that point, then that's the murderer, that whatever, when he's wrapping up the bodies, he's making sure that whatever hairs would normally be there should not be there. And two of them apparently got overlooked on one part and one on the other. So it could be an innocent explanation that those two incidentally falling off the wife's head. But you could say the same for the killer then, couldn't you? There's only one of his. So where is the ball of hair that should be there?
Sure.
Basically, from if this were done by someone who wasn't carefully planning it, and you know, maybe wearing gloves and wearing a hazard type suits or some such thing when they're doing it, and that's an open question. But to say, well, let's see, it could be that there's a normal explanation for hair falling down, doesn't say that's necessarily true, does it? It says it might be true. And the evidence might be true. That's just that, you know, her hair inadvertently happened to be there. But it equally might be true that's not the case, mm-hmm. and that the hair is coming from her because she's there. Nobody knows. So that's why she should be a suspect, amongst other reasons.
I would think at the very least to rule her out.
For the same reason.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
I would say at least to rule her out, to have that conversation.
Right.
It seems very odd to me. And I'm in no way saying that I believe that she had anything to do with the murders. I would not be surprised if they had
what we believe.
Yes.
The point is not what we believe.
Fact.
It's the point is what should be, how should this be viewed by the authorities?
The fact that this was going on for this many years, it seems, in this home. Many people have obviously bizarre ways of managing their relationships, some of them involving open relationships and such. If, in fact, she was aware that he was having sex with the prostitutes in the basement and you have a witness that can attest to that, is that putting her an accomplice in any of the crimes other than being aware that there was illicit sexual acts going on in the basement with a prostitute? Or do you feel that there's more to this story, that she was a wife that just looked the other way on that, or that she had more to do with the actual major crimes that we're talking about here in terms of murder?
Well, start off, before I address that, I thought I heard you say there are couples that have open relationships and the like. Excuse me, but you know, at least for the majority of us, I think in this country, that isn't okay.
Yes, of course.
That doesn't excuse him from having open relationships with other women whom he's paid for in his house.
Everybody has their own beliefs on that, and I certainly, it's not okay with me. It's not going on in my house. But obviously, there are people who do have that, and so I'm speaking from that sort of a perspective. If that's how they operated,
right? And if that's how they operate, they're corrupt, they're immoral, they're wrong, and they may be even criminal, depending upon the circumstances.
Sure.
That's what I say, and that's what a lot of people say. That's what our laws have said up until now. But besides that fact, on the point of this witness, I don't make things up, okay? You know, I've been in this business for 41 years, have a pretty good reputation, I think, and I've done my innumerable trials and hearings and depositions and the like, and I don't have an inclination to make things up. I have a woman I spoke with who's a very lovely person and spoke to me in complete good faith. And I interviewed her for an excess of 6 hours total, 2 interviews. And she is a credible witness as far as I'm concerned. And she's unwilling to reveal herself and unwilling to expose herself for a variety of personal reasons, which are all pretty good as far as I'm concerned. My job is not to prove it's, you know, my job was to simply, I wouldn't have even brought it up. I didn't go to the press conference. Mrs. Ellerup and family, through their lawyers, went to a press conference to announce that everybody should give them more money.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this witness, and I have real victims who didn't get very much money at all over the years, who said, wait a minute, this is outrage, given what's happened to our families.
Sure.
And so I then countered what they did with revealing that I have this witness. This witness is credible. This witness indicates that, yes, this man, Mr. Huerman, had many escorts in his house over the course of years and paid quite a sum of money for them as well, and that the Mrs. Ellerup was perfectly aware of these goings-on and in some points actively engaged in, not in sex, but engaged in activity with the people going in and out of that house who were sex workers, who were escorts. So it's impossible, if that's true, it's impossible for Mrs. Ellerup, and oddly, her children's there when this is happening at certain times. It's impossible for them not to have known that. If you're wondering why they're weird, and why they appear to people to be weird, because they are. Mm-hmm. Look at what, if that's what's going on, I mean, good Lord.
Yeah.
I now, mean, if what does it mean in terms of, you know, if you're participating in the, if you're offering your house to be used for the purposes of prostitution, and it, and prostitution occurs in there, you're an accessory to that crime. Mm-hmm. You're an accomplice to that crime. Now, that doesn't mean you're an accomplice to murder. I didn't say that.
No.
I never said that.
No.
However, if you're accomplice to that, and those crimes all are rooted in those crimes, is the crime of killing some of these people at some time, that becomes a criminal conspiracy. And that also becomes a criminal enterprise, especially if it's done over the course of years with many people. Those people don't have to know that as one of the end products of this criminal conspiracy, there's murder, or that they even know about the possibility of murder. When you're indicted in a conspiracy, or you're indicted in a criminal enterprise case, a RICO type case, there are many people who have no direct connection with the hub of the wheel of all the participants. They're not necessarily part of that at all, but they're indicted nonetheless because of that involvement. So that's what needs to be looked at here. That's up to the authorities with how they want to prosecute and whether they want to prosecute. But at least my point is not that it's true that she's involved in any of those bad acts of murder that took place, but it's not true that it's automatically so that she wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that should be suspected, investigated, and knowing that she's connected to these other crimes should be looked at with a fine scopic view of the evidence.
With what we
That's
know,
how it should go.
With what we know right now, as of our having this conversation, what would you say to someone who's sitting there, who's seen this on the surface, looks at her and go, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe you've gone through all of this," and then the GoFundMe pops up, and someone is thinking about donating to that? What would your response be if somebody says, "Should I donate to this, and why?"
It's a foolish act to donate to people whose money is going to go to the tax authorities, and you're paying for the murderer's tax liabilities. That's the first point. That's overwhelmingly likely. So it's absurd. If you know that fact, as naive as you might be and as kind in your heart as you might be towards people you think might have a problem, you shouldn't do it. Besides that, though, however, it's also foolhardy, because you are being conned by these people, by these sociopaths. They are not the victims. Let's remember that. They were not victimized, okay? The victims were victimized, the real ones, the dead ones, and their relatives. These people are complaining, "Look what happened to my house." They harbored that guy for how many years with the knowledge that they had and did nothing, and they're complaining that their house is pulled apart? Excuse me. Tearing up and dismembering a PlayStation is not a terrible thing, but tearing up a human body and dismembering it is. And taping up the evidence and carrying it out to be tested by the authorities is not a terrible thing. But taping up bodies of people who are dead that you killed and burying them and tossing them into a marsh, yeah, when you wrap them up, that counts. But wrapping up a PlayStation and taking it away does not count. So wake up, and that's my answer to those kind of people. Wake up. Don't give these people the encouragement of any more money. And these people are not poor.
As Attorney John Ray, he is representing some of the families of the victims of the Gilgo Beach serial killer, and his opinions and thoughts and observations on the case. Again, I want to note, us here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast, we do not have proof of what Ray is suggesting, and authorities have initially ruled out any involvement of Elrip, who they say had an alibi at the time of the crimes.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. at participating U.S. Wendy's. Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.